settle in, get comfortable, let our journey begin as we meet the hosts, internationally acclaimed mediums, Nick and Sylvia Avery.
Once again, and welcome to the Spirits Work Show, paranormal, metaphysical, and spiritual show with a difference. I'm Sylvia Avery.
And I'm Mick Avery.
And we're mediums, healers, and authors who have chosen to serve humanity through our gifts of spirit communication. We focus on education, and on this show, through Mick's astonishing gift of deep trance mediumship, we are able to bring you the truth as to the nature of our existence, direct from the other side. Mick is a deep trance medium, and he channels an enlightened spirit guide called Gregory Hay, who is the main spokesperson for a group of highly evolved spirits called the White Cloud Group. Gregory himself had an earth life in the early 1700s in England, but now he has come back to share the vast insights and wisdom he has gained access to with those of us still on the earth. And today's show is going to be about species intercommunication, how species communicate with one another, and yet they do not speak the same language.
We have four books published, The Spirit Within, Spirit Walks with Gregory, The Soul Group, Its Meaning, Magic and Imagery, and Journeys of the Inner Songbird. Our website to look at is www.spirit-teaching.com. As well as Spirit's Work on Mondays at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on blogginservice.com, we also have another show, and that's called The Spirit Teaching Show. And it's every Tuesday night at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on artistfirst.com. Now, in our books and on our radio programs, the spirit world help us to become more informed and knowledgeable about the bigger picture of life and to hopefully steer us onto a more positive path and possible enlightenment in this life. The White Cloud Group is an educational group that consists of scientists, physicists, alchemists, geophysicists, medics, scholars of all description, just the same as people have lived here, and ordinary people just like you and I. They are trying to be of assistance by showing all of us how we can become in harmony with each other and all things, and consequently save our planet. Being a deep trance medium simply means that I have the ability to go into the deep trance state, which allows the spirit team to transport my spirit and my consciousness to the ether world, and then use my body as a vessel for direct communication, so that another entity can speak directly to you without my mind and thoughts getting in the way. I don't very often know where I've been. It's never the same place twice, and only feels like a few minutes or even seconds, and it can be for 2 hours or more. I have perfected the art of subduing my consciousness to the point where the spirit team can transport it along with my spirit to wherever they choose, and then they can communicate with you until they bring me back, when they have finished. It's like having an out-of-body experience every time I do it, and this means that the communication is pure spirit, not filtered information through my mind put into my own words or relayed messages of any kind. It is the total personality of a wise and highly knowledgeable spirit guide who has been training to do this for over 300 years, and who has the backup of the eminent members of the White Cloud Group. Actually, I made the arrangement to do this work with Gregory before I came to have this earth life, and when I was still in the spirit world.
Okay, well, thanks, Mick.
Okay.
Without further ado, I think we'll... If you'd like to go get yourself ready and go off into trance now, and then we'll bring Gregory through.
Okay.
And regular listeners to the Spirits Work show will know that each week we discuss a different topic on this show. And we're here to highlight the normal in paranormal, to eradicate fears that keep us from going forward and doubting our ability. Knowledge is power, and it's for sharing. That's what we feel anyway. So we feel that communication is the key for everybody's enlightenment and power that they can draw to themselves through this knowledge. So communication, let's stretch our minds, let's have fun while we're doing it, you know, let's not get dour, let's be positive, let's not be negative, let's talk to those who know the answers, you know, those who are on the other side. This is what they've come for. So I'd just like to say to everybody who may have just joined us, thank you. And you're about to listen to Spirit Guide Gregory Hay being channeled by Deep Trance Medium Mick Avery. And I'm Sylvie Avery. Welcome to Spirit's Work.
Hello, Faye.
Hello, Gregory.
Hello. Hello, and good to all of you. Mm-hmm. It is with love and light, as always, that we join you in this program that has been set aside for our work. We are so thrilled, as always, to be a part of it. It is an essential ingredient that the spirit world are actually able to bring forward messages of understanding and knowledge in different forms that they may take to help you, to guide you, to perhaps open the box of the mind that you may have sealed through indoctrination or just through the knowledge gathering that you have so far brought about upon yourself. We wish to broaden the mind, to extend the boundaries, open the windows to all understanding, not just to those that you have been narrowly trained to view in your life.
Okay, well, thanks very much for that. And today we're going to be talking about species intercommunication. Is there a specific area that you'd like to start about that? On that subject?
Yes, my dear friend. Now, to begin with, if you yourselves wonder how is it that you can communicate with, for example, the pets, the loved ones that you bring of other species into your lives, this is quite simple. It is because you offer love, you offer a relationship to that animal, and it learns to respect that relationship. This is nothing unusual, because humanity have been doing it ever since the era of the caveman days, or those times in medieval challenges. It is quite simple that different animals have been utilized by human beings to service certain needs, certain desires, perhaps by bringing emotional intent, emotional content into their life. And how you do this is you bring about and establish an emotional relationship with the animal itself. You give it food, and it learns to rely upon that giving. And so for that, you actually become a part of the herd, a part of the pack that itself creates around you. It may see different members of your family group behaving in different ways, and it establishes itself within its own hierarchical relationship with each and every member of your family group. So it sees yourself and others as different relationships, just in the same way as it would had it been continuing to live in the wild state. That, after all, how wolf packs and other animal groups live, that they live by dominance and control from one to another. There are different things that you bring about in this relationship. You extend love, that emotional highest of intent feeling that comes from within. You bring this form of love of self to the animal in question. You bring it to it, and it reacts to that essence of love. It is, in fact, mostly the reason why these animals may come back to visit you once they have passed into our side of life. It is no strange event, perhaps, to many who experience these situations. But what of the interspecies communication between other animals, dogs and cats, or cats and birds? There are interesting relationships between what the cat, for example, requires or establishes in its relationship, how it augments and understands certain behaviors that will entice the bird closer and closer to the cat in order that it may provide it a meal. I understand that this is not a loving, harmonic episode of the relationship, but it is not to say that is the end of it. A bird, for example, may well give certain warnings to other birds, other animals, of a cat's presence. Its whereabouts will actually be noted by the different calling signs that a bird gives. The way it interacts with that knowledge and understanding. And it is not something that will be missed by some species and acknowledged by others. Yes, I understand that most birds in that Aryan group will respond, but also what will happen is that other animals will also respond to the same calling. Mice, voles, and other creatures, vermin you call them, who will respond in different ways to the general ambiance that is brought about by the alarmist creature that brought this situation about. You see, and so gradually it becomes intertwined. Now, you yourselves may well conduct certain scientific experiments, particularly if you are of a harmonic nature. You may, in raising your vibration, establish relationships with wild creatures. You may, in fact, practice this as a form of a meditative state. For example, your presence may well be acknowledged by many different examples of species in your environment. It may well be that if you send your thoughts out, for example, if you are in a harmonic situation, a beautiful vista that you look upon, you may well use your energy and extend it because of the love that returns to you from looking at the specific view you see. And what actually happens, dear friends, during this view you see, is that you extend your loving energy out toward the universe, toward other species that are inhabiting that place at that time. They may well respond to your loving awareness and sing about it. It can even be that you can not only communicate with other animals and birds in this way, but also subterranean species. Fish are a very good example because they are able to gather the wave energy that you send out as it forms and glides through the water, because water being such a good transmitter of wave sound energy, it means that it also has an ability to transmit different forms of love energy. This in itself seems impractical to those on your side of life, because you have had no experience of it. And yet, it may well be that through different times, you yourself may have experience of interspecies species communication with other beings that you could not have thought possible. I am well aware that, yes, people will say, fish, for example, can be a species that are taught purely by the supply of food, purely by the way in which your presence denotes that it is going to be feeding time, and so they become more active. However, it may be that no presence of food is required, and that it is just a signatory of loving kindness that you purvey, as it were, through the water, and lifting your energy and using your energy vibration from within enables a fish itself to respond to this energy. And you may stroke it, it may come right up to you, and you may stroke it and pat it and talk to it, and it will just pleasantly be there because it feels and acknowledges your loving within awareness. It also acknowledges your ability to transmit that energy of love, that you are not going to be there as a predator, because you do not bring your predatory language to that situation. I suppose partly why some people who fish do so in a meditative state. Not necessarily that they are aware that that is why they do it. Perhaps they just take the time and the peace that they are in when fishing to practice meditative states of awareness. But it is also true to say that during this time is possibly a time when any one individual may come to understand a greater aspect of silence of within themselves. So what I am saying, dear friends, is that you yourselves may bring about your thoughts and awareness to interact with other species, not necessarily those you are used to reacting with, the domicile type of species that you use as pets, but really to say that these are species of different form that you may make contact with, not by offering food, but merely by sitting in their presence. And this is quite a good idea, really, just to take a chair and to sit in somewhere that is peaceful and still, in a wood, or even perhaps your garden. You can just do this, move into meditation, and become more aware of the species that are around you. And in this way, you may bring communication toward them because your energy and your love in awareness whilst you are meditating is always expanding outward. For example, that when you are in a meditative state, it may well be that your auric field will extend possibly to some 20 or 30 feet beyond yourself. And this, in its own way, creates a light energy that attracts other species. This isn't something, of course, that is only fixed to humanity, but other species may do this too. And it would depend upon whether you are sensitive enough to view it or not.
So how do specific animals communicate with each other?
Well, they will do it, of course, through their own distinct forms of language. This has become formed via their habitat because of their instinct that has driven them. They are songs. They are not merely songs, but whole cacophonies of language structure that is brought about. Now, I am well aware that many people in science fields say that the bird language is a very restrictive practice, that it merely is occupied in a certain frame of reference. There are perhaps only 80 or so different characters within that language. But it is not true to say that just because they are given out in a specific way, that they always mean the same thing, because it would depend upon the atmospheric condition that they are describing. So one passage of language from, say, a blackbird or some singing song thrush or other kind of songbird that may appear from time to time in whatever country, it is to say that these songbirds, yes, they will have a certain vocabulary, but they also apply this vocabulary in a slightly different way at different times of the day. Their evensong will be far more melodic than that of the morning song. And it is not to say, dear friends, that the way in which they specifically sing at one time of the day will always characterize their mood. And it is not to say either that they are only really singing to establish their habitat. It is to say these are joyful songs of their life. They are songs in their key of life, you see, in the way that they live. And what they are giving is, they are giving these parcels of words, of language, in their form. And these create pictures. All animals look and see and sense these pictures, because pictorially, different animals may understand through the sense of what they see, even in their minds, far greater and far easier than the barriers of language may place before you. So, for example, if you are looking at a particular object and you use your language to describe it, some other being in your own species who speaks a completely different language uses completely different characters in order to describe the same thing. You are both looking at the same thing, you are both acknowledging it, yet your languages are so structurally different. Yet if you just look and use the language of pictures, of images, then that is something that you can bring as a source to all beings to understand. How then could it be that you could sing a particular thought form of an image? This is the difficulty that human beings find so complex an issue, whereas animals do not. Because they merely sing about their environment. They sing about their species, their own intent. It is in a simple, structured way, because they do not need the complexities that, as human beings, we need. And I say we because I am still a human being. I am a spirit, yes, but I've had a human existence, and so my genetics bring me into that way. Because that is the thought form I have had brought upon me and is brightest at this present time in my spirit.
So do animals rely on the songs of birds to have an impact on their day, direct their day or their life? Or I mean, I know obviously if this is a distressing call of
yes.
a bird and they're all going absolutely, you know, frantic, then that's obvious that they would be wary. But ordinary bird song, do animals in nature rely on that to enliven their day and to have an impact on their day in any way?
Well, I would have to say, dear friend, that that is something that endears a particular animal family group to continue living in a particular environment, because they find it compelling to be there. Because they are happy within that structure, you see. Now, it is not to say that this then means that they are having to constantly recreate that energy in order to still be there. They rely upon the bird song, perhaps, in order to feel that they are happy in their environment, because it is always an indication, if there is bird song, that all is well within the natural balance of things in that particular place. Now, coming to your point about the anxiety or the perhaps the alarm call that you so readily point out, this may actually be something that is first triggered through the sense of vibration that is felt within the earth. So it is to say that if there were to be something that was happening far away, but that would eventually impact upon that animal group, it would possibly be first felt through the wave of energy that has actually impacted at that place. Now, it is not necessarily something that travels through the soil, per se, as the vibration energy that has been released, perhaps a volcanic eruption or an earthquake or something like that, you see. So we are not talking about the actual vibration as it moves through the earth, but what we are talking about is the alarm call that is raised by the animals, the sensory alarm call, should I say, that is raised by the animals in the place in the vicinity of where that eruption happened, you see?
Yes.
And this can, in fact, be fishes, just the same as it can be animals on breathing air on your side of life. And so actually what happens is that these sensory alarm calls are sent through the ether world. And that is why it travels so much quicker than the actual vibration energy within the soil, so that animals will actually feel and understand the sensory vibration within the ether world before the vibration through the soil in a physical way. This is why that during some situations, for example, in your recent earthquake that you had within the Indian Ocean, it simply meant that the animals from many hundreds or even thousands of miles away picked up the sensory awareness through the ether world before it actually came that the physical energy interrupted their space in real time. Because ether world connection is almost instantaneous. It takes no time to travel from one point to another point because it exists without time. Because what in fact you are doing, dear friend, is you are sending the signal through the ether world, which really means that it is a world without time.
Yes, there was elephants and other animals that took to higher ground.
Yes, quite so, and this is why they did it, friend. They didn't pick up the vibration through their feet. First of all, it was brought to them through their sensory perception of the ether world. I know some people would call this telepathic urgency, but in fact, telepathy actually works not purely through the physical void that you understand, but it works through combining that void with interdimensional communication from one side to the other, and then back again.
Oh, we'll carry on with that. I'd like to say thank you for those who may have just joined us. You're listening to Spirit Guide Gregory Hay, being channeled by Deep Trance Medium Mick Avery, and I'm Sylvie Avery. Welcome to Spirit's Work. Yeah, so tell us more about telepathy, because horses, I know you've said before that horses are telepathic.
Yes, friend. Absolutely so. Even more so, perhaps, than many other animals, because they have been acutely aware, being around humanity for such a long time, of different nuances, different situations that are brought upon them. They are able, in fact, to quite distinctly communicate one to another, not through actual visual impact, but through their minds, using their telepathic ability to connect instantly with the spirit world. They are, in fact, particularly sensitive when it comes to being in an environment that has had hostility within it. Now, I know that many people would possibly cite the situation of a horse going to an abattoir, and that how that feels. It instantly knows, in fact, when it has got into the vehicle of transportation, where it is going. It doesn't have to know anything else.
Gosh.
Because it has already picked up upon all of the fears and the knowledge of all of those other animals before it, and no amount of scrubbing will enable that to be gone.
Mm-hmm. They are telepathic with each other as well as with the spirit world.
Yes, my dear friend. So what I'm saying is that they do not need to be visually present with one another. You can have different horses in completely different fields, not even being aware of one another, and yet they are able to send messages back and forth. And they are able to do this through their telepathic means. They have a structure of language which is, in fact, it is somewhat similar to language that you use. But, of course, it will depend entirely upon what language it is that they have been schooled in or that they have been present in via human activity.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying that the language of horse is treated as an outcast, as a lesser form of language. What I'm saying is that sometimes it may be that horse language from one to another varies purely because of the different human beings who are surrounding it, who are forming relationships with it, you see.
Mm.
And so different horses will react in different ways. If you're talking about it in the wild state, then that is a different matter entirely, because those horses will react purely in their own inimitable way. It will be purely in the language of horse.
But it will still be a different form of telepathy.
Yes, indeed so. It is that, you see, because of the fact that horses themselves are very spiritual beings, they are able to meditate, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They are able to go into peaceful silence. This is sometimes upset by some horses because they have been ill-treated in some way, and so they are not able to go into these times of peace. And this is something that can actually upset their equilibrium and bring very great distress to them. So when you have a horse, you must always try to ensure that it has times of peace and stillness to be able to be within itself, within its own environment.
So are you saying that horses in the wild that are brought into contact with our domesticated horses that have been around people for a long time, that they can still communicate with each other, though, can't they?
Yes, of course
but
they
can. But it would be slightly different?
Yes, because they will use their innate communication ability that derives from their species. That is one thing. And it doesn't matter where the horse has come from or what country. It is still that each horse will be able to communicate through and across different species divides. It may be that a Shetland can quite easily communicate with any other kind of a horse, a Shire or even an Arabian, will communicate in just the same way as a donkey or an ass, because they are all of the same type and form, the same as zebra. And okapi, you see? Because they are all of the same thought form and a very similar species makeup. And because of that, they actually have the same language structure, the basic language structure of their instinct, you see? And that is something that is their form of language that they use to telepathically communicate one to another.
So are there other animals that are telepathic?
Yes, of course. Whales and dolphins are telepathic as well as having the sonic capability of driving their communication actually within the physical world, a great distance. And this is something that, yes, they are able, in fact, to create a great and beautiful arrangement of sound. And this is purely and simply because they are able to use their ability, their repertoire, if you like, is very broad because they use their ancient knowledge, which is quite different, perhaps, to those that humanity faces. Humanity itself tends to live from one generation to another. It does not necessarily interrelate through and across different generations. It does not take in the ancestry knowledge of what humanity has brought about beforehand, whereas whales and dolphins and various other forms of the same ilk will actually have contact with ancestral knowledge and will use that knowledge and sing about it. They will communicate that knowledge in a physical way and also telepathically to one another. They do not have to use the structure of language in the way that you use the structure of language, because they talk in songs. They do not use actual words. They are able to bring their songs into pictorial reference, which is why, dear friend, when many people on your side of life hear a whale song, it invokes so many ancient memories. It is because of the fact that they are in tune with the ancient memory pattern of their species, just the same as you could be if you took the attention and the sensitivity to develop that timeline link between you in the present form and your ancestral knowledge.
And you've said before that that dolphins can actually see through us. So
yes,
that's another form of communication to us in a way.
It is, dear friend, in that, yes, they actually see through you in different ways. They use their intent, their harmonic, that actually pairs the flesh, if you like.
Mm.
And that harmonic enables them to see what is going on inside of you. So, actually, that is why a dolphin is able to bring healing to a physical human being. Or, in fact, dolphins are also able to bring healing to other animals, though that has not actually been tried yet in physical terms, in human life, or in a way that would be of profound benefit to those seeking knowledge and awareness of that system. It is to say that because dolphins in particular have a certain approach to their life, that they are able to redefine what is expected of a particular species, because they are constantly renewing and crossing the divide between the physical world and the spirit world.
Hmm. So if you could get a sick horse in the water with a dolphin, it would have to do the same effect as it does when you have the children.
Yes.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Absolutely so. It is something that a dolphin would do as well.
Mm.
It wouldn't attack it. It would be very close to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it would actually
natural.
What would happen would be that the animal, the horse or whatever, would actually relax in its presence, because it would instantly know it is not there to harm it, but to heal it, to give it help and understanding. and it is because of its own contact with its ancestral knowledge, it brings other animals into close proximity with their own understanding, their innate understanding of their own species and why they are here, why they are having life at all. It is unfortunate that humanity has taken upon itself to misuse the wonderful faculties that these creatures have. It is because they have been ancient for such a long time, in the sense of the way in which the earth has continued to be available to different species of physical life.
Yes.
Other spirit having a physical experience.
Elephants come into that category as well, don't they?
Yes, my dear friend, they do.
Species.
Yes, of the ancient ones, yes. Absolutely so, because they have a memory that is reaches far back into their ancient ancestry that they are constantly aware of. This is not something that they are taught, but is actually within their genetic model, within their synergy, if you like, of their actual makeup, what makes them into what they are.
So, do animals like horses that don't eat meat know that we eat meat?
Yes, absolutely. So they can smell it, they can sense it in your character sometimes. I'm not saying that this is something that is at odds with how you behave necessarily, because it depends upon how that use of food actually manifests itself within your form, how you yourself are a sensitive being or a not-so-sensitive being. You see, it will not necessarily be a specific food group that would bring about a change in your energy balance or in how you tend to harmonize with a certain animal or not. Obviously, as we have said so many times before, if you are a vegetarian only, and that is the way that you subsist in your life, then you will in fact bring about a greater possibility of enlightenment within your life now than you would if you were a carnivore. And that is simply a matter of balance, a matter of how different beings find themselves and their own inner abilities to progress in the life that you have.
And do certain animals, I mean, we obviously, apart from dogs, I think probably people will think of dogs straight away, but do certain animals understand us humans better than others? Are there other animals that we don't realize that really have got us quite sussed out?
Well, yes, of course. Cows and sheep are not among them.
No.
But yes, there are many animals that actually can see and understand exactly what you are. Very many different forms of birds, for example, know how human beings react. And that is why they are all so very fearful of you, because it has become a genetic imprint pattern in their life. It is quite strange, really, that to some animals, the imprint of genetics actually becomes very strong, even from the standpoint of an environmental pressure that has grown over years, over decades of time, or hundreds or even thousands of years. That behavior of one does not simply mean that animal will always be free towards that species. You see, so that you may actually have quite a very difficult time in persuading a wild bird, for example, to become friendly with you, even though you give it a lot of food. It may be that, as within certain species of the avian food, of the avian bird variety, that they will become genetically enhanced or used to being around you because they see it from one generation to another as it is taught through instinct that it is good to be around you. So pigeons, for example, will always be very close to human beings. They will tend to nest close to them. They will rely upon them as a food source, the same as seagulls are beginning to do as well. And this is simply because wherever there are human beings, there will be food left and wasted. And so it is economically understandable that they would stay with you. So this actually becomes something of a genetic imprint as well. It is not something that is purely learned, you see, but it will be something that is gradually brought about through the genetic harmony, the harmonic of that group.
Are there other... which animals interact with spirit more readily, are more aware of you?
Yes, well, dogs and cats, of course. Horses, as I say, are most intently aware. But perhaps, actually, horses are more aware than donkeys, and are more aware than zebra or okapi. It is simply that horses have a greater sense in that respect. Alligators, on the other hand, and crocodiles are not sensitively aware to spirit. And nor are some specific other forms. Chimpanzees are not aware of spirit.
Oh, I'm surprised.
And I'm aware of that, yes.
Hmm.
But in a different way, gorillas and orangutans are aware of spirit.
They're more meditative sort of beings, aren't they?
Well, yes, absolutely so. And in fact, they are herbivores, whereas chimpanzees are omnivorous. Which is not to say that that is something of their detriment, but that it has become that chimpanzees in the wild are far more society orientated.
They can be quite aggressive, can't they?
Yes, absolutely so.
And cats? So you said cats?
Yes, I did say cats.
What about deer?
Well, deer are extremely sensitive to spirit and also, of course, to the underworld.
The underworld, you mean fairies and elves and...
Yes, quite so. It is because of the underworld that deer continue to be around places of humanity. Otherwise, they would have scared them away, you see? But purely, I suppose, because of the fact that humanity's instinct has always been to hunt them. And so they have always felt pressured by that instinct, by that form of instinct. But in many places, you will find that deer freely interact with human dwellings, will come very close to them, purely and simply because of the underworld contact that shows them that there is nothing to fear in that particular place, even though dogs may bark, you see. And that is purely the reason why that place. Deer are very susceptible to spirit on our side of life.
So does that mean that you won't get the underworld, you won't get fairies in areas of where people hunt, so that they don't lead deer to those places?
That is actually something that has continued to increase in the way in which they behave toward these different creatures. in the natural world, that they have tried to lead them to different areas, not the ritualistic hunting grounds that people have, which is why they've found that over the years that they have had to move to different places in order to try to track them down.
Mm-hmm. What about bears?
Well, bears themselves have only two things on their mind, and that is food and sleeping. And it is to say that they will, it is unfortunate that they so aggressively defend their territory to anything that they see as being threatening to them.
Yes.
Which is why their decline has been in the state it has.
Yes.
It is to say that bears are not extremely intelligent at all. In fact, they have quite a low vocabulary. It isn't to say that, though, that they are lower life forms.
No.
They just different signatories that interest them. And among those signatories, food is the top thing on their list.
Mm.
That is what they live to do, is to eat.
Yes.
And not a lot else, you see.
Yes.
Whereas other animals actually take pleasure in their thing, in what they do with their lives. Now, this isn't not to say that some bears do not adopt a different attitude. They do. And polar bears most certainly do, because they actually have a lot more time on their hands than any other bears in the natural environment. So polar bears, for example, will actually create play. They will create times together when they are able to react in a loving environment.
Mm.
Which is quite opposed to other forms of bears that do not. Some bears will actually only live in a completely different way, but that is something that is a matter of genetics and species. It is not a matter of their spiritual awareness, perhaps.
Mm.
You have to be careful not to cast some animals into being spiritually aware when they are not. It isn't to say that they will never be, but that sometimes the animal's life is so stark and real that all it can do is try to survive.
Yeah.
Yet at other times, if it is not so pressured in its environment, then it will relax and it will have time to sit and think. It will have time to create understanding and awareness greater than the subject of itself. And it is not genetics that puts a brake upon that. It is not genetics that holds that back. The awareness possibility may still exist. It is how it reacts with its environment and how much pressure the environment puts upon it, which denotes whether it is a happy bear or a happy wolf or a happy whatever, you see.
Mm.
And it will react in a positive way if that environment is positive,
yeah,
and harmonic. And so it isn't to say that it is difficult, you see, to create what is a natural state, because at this present time, in this present knowing, you have created a climate of control and negativity for many different creatures. I'm saying you as humanity. And so what transpires is that because of this pressure that humanity places upon the natural environment, it means that the spirituality of different species and their thought forms have concentrated purely upon the survival instinct rather than the awareness instinct of gathering knowledge and receiving knowledge of their ancestral home.
We've just got a couple of minutes left. I'd just like to know, I'm sure it would be interesting to the listeners, You've told us before that the different animal species of the Earth, when they go back to the spirit world, they have their own soul groups.
Yes.
But do they mix with each other in the spirit world?
Yes.
They do. And do they have the same sort of hierarchy thing that we have here? Or are they, you know, are they frightened, naturally frightened of each other the same as they were here?
They are not, dear Pen. No, they are not, because their instinct changes, because they are faced with the reality of who exactly they are. Now, that's what I'm trying to say to you, is that sometimes in the natural physical world, you may come across animals who have already faced that reality in their own physical life and are aware of it because of their instinct, their genetic knowledge that has come from their ancestry that they are sensory aware of. In time, it will become that when they come to the spirit world, that they gravitate once again toward that central ancestry knowledge, and that gradually they become more enthused with that knowledge and aware that they are not just there designed to be eating machines, that they are not just there to gather that aspect for their own genetic family tree. They are there for the whole, because they are a part of what God is, just as much as any other being. And that they, in the spirit world, learn to live in peace, one with another, because they do not have to eat each other in the spirit world.
Well, that's what I was thinking, and I was wondering if it just was something that dwindled away, that died out.
Yes,
you know,
it is an aspect only of the physical life. Mm-hmm. It is not something that is strained mm-hmm. in the spirit world.
Yes, because they don't bear grudges, do they?
They do not. There is no intent, because they are not doing it for their vicarious fun.
Mm.
They are not doing it for their own enjoyment. They are doing it purely for survival.
Mm.
And in that way, they really wish, above all, to be harmonic in the purest form, because that is the aspect of God that they are.
Well, this has been fascinating, Gregory, once again, of course.
Thank you so, dear friend, for this time we have shared. We hope that this has illuminated some thoughts, undone some crossed wires, and that we have been able to show that different species are not as harmful, not as vicious as you may think, but that they contain a great deal of communication skills that you can only wonder at in physical form, because you do not use that form of your ancestral knowledge, of your sensitivity to the spirit you are, or the spirit world in general. Go forward and try to bring your mind into open awareness. The window of the universe awaits you. Good day.
Good day. Thank you, Gregory. Well, we've just only got a very short time to say about our books. And if you'd like to find out more about us, our website is www.spirit-teaching.com. We have 4 books available at bookshops and at Amazon. And it's really only time to say thank you very much for joining us, and I hope you've enjoyed the show. You've been listening to Gregory Hay, that's been channeled by Deep Trance medium Mick Avery, and we hope you've enjoyed the show. Be peaceful, be positive, be focused on your goal, knowing that you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.